Good afternoon and welcome to the only show you need to get you through your Wednesday, to get you through another crazy, wild, maddening day of news that we're going to figure out together live on the Jason Rand Show on AM 770 KTTH and 94.5 FM on the Greater East Side. We got a lot to get to. We only have 2 hours left to do it. We're going to take you through a pretty alarming crime that happened last night in Renton. I'll just tell you two details. Two details just to get you thinking about it. Gunfire, gas station.
Yeah.
Yeah. Herschel Walker is taking on more tough questions about whether or not he paid for the abortion of an ex-girlfriend, all while being very much pro-life. And does that even matter? For a lot of people, it doesn't. We'll explore. Plus, Kent is one step closer to expanding the camping ban against homeless people. Activists are upset. Activists are being ignored. That's exactly how it should be. We're going to get to those stories and so much more this hour of the Jason Rand Show, brought to you by 3010, weightlossforlife.com. Lots of news happening all around the world and right here at home. So let's find out what's trending.
What's trending? Your health.
Washington hospitals are in very deep financial trouble. There is a little doubt about it based on a survey that 97% of the state hospitals just completed for the Washington State Hospital Association, also known as, actually, this one makes sense, WASHA. And I have to assume, though, all these hospitals are lying, or maybe WASHA is lying. It can't be true that these hospitals are dealing with financial woes, because I was told that all of them are greedy and they were refusing to pay the nurses their worth, their value. All because of that kind of greed, they wanted to hang on to all that money so that the CEOs of these hospitals would go home and swim in big pools filled with $100 bills and gold coins. That's what we were told. And then after nurses all across the state, depending on where it was they worked, after they went on strike or made their big demands and threatened to go on strike and they got their extra money, their high salaries, I remember hearing people say, see, I told you, if they didn't have this money, they wouldn't have put it into the paychecks of these nurses anymore. See, they lied. Oh, okay. Fox 13 says officials reviewed financial reports from the first 6 months of 2022, and the result was, quote, unsustainable losses that could affect the people who need health care. Cassie Sauer is with the Washington State Hospital Association. She spoke with Fox 13. And she said patients may not be getting the care that they need as a result of what inevitably will be cuts.
And our biggest concern here is it's putting patient care at risk in many communities across the state and jeopardizing patients' ability to get the hospital care that they need.
Now, the report says Washington had a net loss of $1.75 billion during the first half of this year. Okay, one and three quarter billion dollars. That puts the total operating losses combined with investment losses to a point that is truly unsustainable. While at the same time, the operating expenses in total went up a little more than 11%, just shy of 12% compared to 2021. So they're bringing in less money. They're spending more money. Even a Democrat could figure out what that means. The CFO for WASHA, Eric Lewis, said as a result, we're going to start to see some closures of hospitals.
This 12% net loss is unsustainable. We are already seeing service cuts, limits on hospital admissions. As possible, without action, we could see hospital closures. We already have fewer hospital beds per capita than any other state. Yep. Once a hospital closes, that community will not have access to timely emergency and specialty care.
That is a reality already. Overlake Medical Center, they closed one of their urgent care centers. They did that because of the finances. So understand what's been happening to lead to this. So number one, we already talked about it, right? The nurses demanded way more money than these hospitals could afford. It's not to say that the nurses aren't worth what they're getting paid now. But when you make these demands for higher wages without understanding the financial realities that the hospitals or any business are facing, you end up in a situation like this. You just weakened the hospital's financial health to the point where, hey, kudos to you. You just got $5 more an hour or $10 more an hour. But in the long term, you might be out of a job because of that move. What happened at the same time over the course of the last 2 years as we're giving more money to nurses? What happened in the last 2 years? Or I should say, what didn't happen? When COVID hit and the pandemic hit, we were told you shouldn't even leave your house. And there were people who they don't get reimbursements from Medicare for someone who is choosing not to go in. Again, not going in because of the folks, some of them at hospitals and in public health, saying don't go in. You could potentially get COVID and die. So they are, I have to imagine, regretting some of the language that was used and the warnings that were put out, given what we know now and frankly what we knew then about COVID. The CEO of Overlake Medical Center in Bellevue is Mike Marsh.
We do frequently find ourselves looking at our surgery schedule and considering postponing surgeries in order to open up a surgical bed that can manage a medical patient that comes through the ER, and which is a major inconvenience to the individuals who need the surgeries.
Now, what you just heard there ties into another issue that's happening for some of the hospitals, where they've got a bunch of patients in, and they could be getting paid for the services they're providing, but they're not able to bring in enough patients or see enough patients because the ones that they have that are ready to be discharged, especially when we're talking about elderly folks, they don't have anywhere to go. There's a staffing shortage at elder care facilities, which means they cannot accept the patients who are being discharged. Thus, those patients take up space, take up room in the hospital, takes up a bed that otherwise could go to someone who's sick and needs help, which then, of course, would then bring in some revenue into the hospital. Jackie Cobb, or Cabe, with UW Medicine, notes to Fox 13, this is a pretty significant issue.
And while they're awaiting discharge, we receive little or no reimbursement for our services, despite costs of over $1,600 a day in an acute care setting.
All of this is happening. It kind of felt like we knew this was going to happen. It kind of felt like we could have written this script and we made comments saying so months and months and months ago. And here is the reality. I don't know what the answer is. Now, I know that folks over at WASHA are trying to get the legislature to step up and maybe increase the amount that they get from Medicare in certain circumstances. I don't know if that's enough. COVID and the rules around it and the advice during the pandemic, it completely upended this system of healthcare. And we are now living with the consequences. We are living with so many consequences, unintended consequences, or intended, depending on the circumstance, as a result of really bad mistakes that weren't just made during COVID, but continue to be made during COVID. And that's where we find ourselves. And that's a shame. So we'll figure out what the details are. Let's find out what else is trending.
What's trending? Crime.
Well, two people were shot last night in Renton at a gas station, which does not sound especially safe. I mean, the one hand, you've got the gunshots. That's obviously unsafe. Gunshots near gas could lead to a big explosion. Now, thankfully, the PM last night, two men, both adults, they were found by police with gunshot wounds. Witnesses spoke with Como TV, and they said it happened in the middle of the gas pumps as people were pumping gas. At some point at this AM/PM on Rainier Avenue North, the suspect pulled up in a vehicle, rolled down the windows, and started shooting at the two people. Then the driver, and we believe there might have been just one other person in the car with him, they fled. Police don't have any details yet that they're sharing publicly, which means that person or persons are still on the loose. Now, Eric lives nearby, and because we've talked about this particular area before, there's a lot of crime that happens here.
All the shell casings that were out there, it made me concerned. I mean, I just lived two blocks down the road, so, I mean, even a stray bullet could have made it to my house. Once or twice, a week, you'll hear gunshots, or at least what it sounds like to be gunshots.
They're gunshots.
I mean, that's pretty normal. I'm sure it was drug-related, maybe gang-related, but whatever it is, we prefer to not even have it here.
I mean, the truth of the matter is, and thank you for preferring not to have gun violence in your neighborhood. I think most people would take that same position. Great hot take. It probably was gang and drug-related. Again, this has the hallmarks of gang violence. This is a form of, I mean, it's a drive-by, although in this case, I guess he stopped in the gas station and just fired from his vehicle. But that's usually what gang members do. And again, this is one particular area of King County that has seen an increase in gang violence. Doesn't get talked a lot about. I think crime in Renton kind of gets downplayed a little bit because of it's really just pockets of Renton that are dealing with these incidents. But people like Eric don't want to deal with this. Geraldine, who lives nearby as well, she's lived in Renton all of her life, and she finds herself in the position that so many other Washingtonians find themselves in. We just want to get back to where things were, when things were safer.
It's gotten really worse. I mean, I've lived there all my life, and I've just noticed every year it just keeps getting worse and worse. The violence, I don't know if it's just having stricter laws. I mean, I know they're trying, but it just needs to be better. Something needs to happen.
Something does need to happen. And for some people who realize that help is not on the way, at least not fast enough for your comfort, for their comfort, they're deciding to arm themselves. They're deciding to purchase a firearm for self-defense purposes. And it's somewhat ironic that Democrats are trying to take away your guns that you're buying only because Democrats put in place policies that made life less safe. There is some irony there. But the good news is, as Democrats are trying to take away your guns, we do finally have a conservative Supreme Court. A Supreme Court, not in Washington, the U.S. Supreme Court, that actually subscribes to the Constitution and thinks it's a wonderful document that comes with great meaning, that provides for us protection against Democrats and the Democrat Party as they're trying to do their gun confiscation while pretending that's not what they're doing. That's exactly what they're doing. They're just doing it a little bit slower than maybe some Democrats would hope they would. Fox News has a story on a Supreme Court decision, and it's not really the traditional decision. They said in the case Morin versus Lever, which centers around a Massachusetts law that imposes really, really, really strict restrictions on whether or not someone can purchase or possess a handgun. It includes the need for a license to purchase or possess a pistol. It's very similar to what that New York law was. Well, they said, yeah, no, we just ruled in that New York law and said pretty clearly that it was overzealous and unconstitutional. So, hey, lower court that decided that this law was constitutional, yeah, we are sending this case back. It's not constitutional. So why don't you figure it out? Why don't you look at our previous ruling and then get back to us with your own ruling? So this is good news that the Supreme Court decided to step up. And again, remember that New York law, it was so restrictive that they forced people to get in front of a bureaucrat to explain to them, to pitch to them, why they should be allowed to own a weapon, a firearm, a handgun. And if the bureaucrat didn't think you had cause to purchase one, they wouldn't allow you. That's not how constitutionally protected rights work. That's never how it was supposed to work. But when Democrats had a lot of control in the judicial branch, they were able to get away with things like that. And now, thankfully, conservatives are in charge. That was a 6-3 ruling, by the way, which meant even John Roberts sided with the Second Amendment. Clarence Thomas wrote for the majority at the time, "The constitutional right to bear arms in public for self-defense is not a second-class right subject to an entirely different body of rules than the other Bill of Rights guarantees. We know of no other constitutional right that an individual may exercise only after demonstrating to government officers some special need." And that is so important here. The equivalent is, and this would be disgusting to folks on the left as much as it would be on the right. If you want to vote, you have to prove that you have a real desire to and a knowledge of the candidates before voting. And you have something on the line. Or let's use something on the left. You have to go in front of a bureaucrat to beg them to give you permission to get an abortion. You think folks on the left would allow for that? No. Definitely not on that issue. And yet when it comes to guns, they're okay. Let's find out what else is trending.
What's trending? Let's get political.
Herschel Walker's son, Christian Walker, who was always a fan of his father, at least publicly, as far as we've known Christian Walker to be a public, you know, voice. All of a sudden, a lot of us yesterday were shocked to see a video in response to a Daily Beast claim that Herschel Walker paid a girlfriend at the time, this was several years ago, to get an abortion. It was $750. And they say they've got the receipts, they've got the proof. Herschel Walker denies this. But then all of a sudden, you see Christian Walker come out and call his father a liar.
Don't lie about your life at the expense of me, my mom, and all of the people that you've affected throughout your life. You don't get to pretend you're some moral family guy. You don't get to pretend all these things. Talk policy, talk normal, do not lie.
So we talked a little bit about this yesterday with Eric Erickson from his radio show, syndicated show based in Atlanta. And we talked about this, you know, Herschel Walker doesn't want to go after his son. He loves his son. And this is family drama that's unfolding publicly. And in fairness to the media's role in that, they're not the ones who brought this up, not the family part. Christian decided to do it, and he did it in a very public way. And so media outlets, conservative and left-wing, will ask Herschel Walker about this, and I think that it is appropriate to. And so Brian Kilmeade on Fox and Friends this morning asked Herschel Walker about what had happened.
So he saw that and says, "You're lying, Herschel. What do you say about your son? Is he telling the truth?"
Well, I love my son unconditionally, and that's where I've always been. I always love him unconditionally. You know, he graduated college a couple of months ago. He's now a young man doing his own thing, but his father's always there for him. I always will be for any of my kids, and I love him. I always support him, and I always have supported him, and I always will, and I love him unconditionally.
But was he lying? He's saying, yes, he's lying, but I'm not going to call him a liar because I love my son. And again, there's two ways to look at this. Herschel is either lying here or he's telling the truth, right? There's no ambiguity. You either did this or you didn't. So for the sake of the argument, let's say that he didn't do this and the Daily Beast article was a hit piece and Christian fell for it. Herschel, as a good father, is probably doing what any dad would do, which is not drag his son through the mud. There are some fathers like Joe Biden who will cover for someone who's breaking the law and will lie about it and smear people who call it out. And then there are good fathers like Herschel Walker who he just refuses to call out his son. And, you know, Christian is doing what he's doing for whatever reason. I don't know. Maybe he truly believes that his father did this. Maybe there's some other drama that we don't know about and it's not necessarily our business. But at the end of the day, there are a lot of people on our side of things, the pro-life crowd, who look at Herschel Walker, and they're probably having some internal conflicts. They're having these internal debates, saying to themselves, I'm very much pro-life. He says he's pro-life, but he's not acting that way. What do I do? Because I know what's on the line, which is the control of the Senate. And if the Senate goes to the Democrats, they might be able, if they have enough support, and they could, they could go ahead and take advantage of Roe v. Wade being overturned by codifying it into law in a more meaningful way. And so do I care that Herschel Walker as an individual paid for an abortion one time? If it means putting him in office and ensuring that millions of babies in the long term don't get killed, I think it's worth that. So a lot of people are having that conversation. A lot of folks have tripled down on supporting Herschel Walker because they believe this to be a smear. And it does kind of feel like a smear to me. And they're saying, yeah, we're going to give you more money because this was a tight race going into this news. And I don't know how much on the ground this changes.
I was forgiven. The Lord has forgiven me. Like I said, I'm a Christian. I will always be a Christian. That's the reason I got into this race, because I see things that are going wrong that's not right in this country. They're trying to separate us. They're trying to divide us. Well, I want to bring people together. That's the way I've always been. I don't care who you are and whether you have fallen down. I'm telling you can get up. I'm telling you that you can have success if you're willing to admit your problem
right.
and get up and keep going forward. But they want to take their seat away. They need this seat here in Georgia. And I'm telling everyone out there, and I'm not trying to promote anything here. You got to go to teamherschel.com. Let's keep this seat. Right. I can promise you I'm going to win this seat.
And again, things are very tight. Now, 538 did a review or a reanalysis of the voter sentiment on the ground in Georgia. And they said it is unlikely that this scandal changes anything in Georgia. They say only 6% of their forecast for the Georgia Senate is based on, quote unquote, fundamentals, which they say include variables like scandals, the partisan lean in Georgia, the incumbency of Warnock, the Democrat who currently holds it, only 6%. So unless it's razor, razor, razor thin, the lead for either of them, they're saying this is not going to impact things. Hopefully they're right, because I'm in the camp of I want to make sure that we win back the Senate. 1-800-465-8770 if you want to join the conversation and send me a text. I stole back the two tickets that Max was going to give to his parents for the Freedom Series, which is now sold out. We're going to give away those tickets when we come back. Sorry to your parents. Tell mom and dad I'm sorry. It's Jason Rancho. By the way, you're listening to What's Trending, brought to you by Guardian Roofing and Gutters.
Regular business hours.
Yelp, Tacoma, Bremerton, Bothell.
This is the Big Local on the Jason Rance Show.
Redmond, Sumner, Kent.
Stories about you, not about Seattle.
Hey, look at that. It's 4:30 on a weekday afternoon. That means it's time for the Big Local, brought to you by Alpine Specialty Services. Online at alpineclean.com. This is the part of the show where we completely ignore stories coming out of Seattle, and instead we focus all of our attention on the communities you live in and care about most. And we start in Renton, the scene of the very next Freedom Series. Tickets are now sold out. However, I've got a pair of tickets I decided to take from Max, who was going to give them to his parents. It's the first time I was going to meet the folks. I was feeling a little nervous, hoping that they'd like me. They wouldn't reject me. But I decided, yeah, I don't care about your parents. I don't really want to meet them, if I'm being honest. So I'm going to give tickets away to you guys in the audience in the next 10 minutes. So stick around and you will have the opportunity to win a pair of tickets to the Freedom Series next Wednesday at 7 in Renton. Now let's go over to Kent. The city is now one step closer to expanding the homeless camping ban. Last night, the city's operations and public safety committee, they unanimously approved this ordinance, which basically allows them to clear encampments without notice. And the reason they're doing this, as Kent Chief Administrative Officer Pat Fitzpatrick said last night, it's just about public safety.
An ever-increasing quantity of dangerous materials, be it drug paraphernalia, needles, human waste, hazardous chemicals. We have business owners that are being required to invest a significant amount of money in the safety of their employees, the safety of their customers.
And it's not fair. It's not fair for them to have to do that. So the city stepped in and said, okay, we're going to have to do this. And by the way, we're not going to just do this willy-nilly. We're going to use this as an opportunity to push people into services. This is the carrot and stick approach, the one that was so successful in Marysville. That when you go up to someone who's living out on the street, you say, look, we don't want you living out on the street. You're going to die here. It's not safe for you, and it's not fair to the people who live in the community. We will put you into shelter right now. If you don't want that option, okay, but we're going to hassle you to get out of this spot. Ultimately, if we have to kick you out of the city, I guess that's what we're going to do. We would prefer, however, that you take us up on our offer. We're giving you help. Mayor Dana Ralph spoke with Como.
And I stand by this. If someone comes to us in need of services, we will find them services.
We will find them services. That's a good message. And yet, of course, we hear from people who say that this approach lacks compassion. The only people who say that, pretty much the only people who say that, are activists. And every single community has them. They come out to the meetings. They pretend that they represent the will of the people. When they don't, they're just the ones who have time to show up to a meeting where other people are either at work or dealing with their family. They have lives. And unfortunately, we have ceded a whole lot of power to the activist community. The thing is, it doesn't always work. When you have a council that is either majority conservative or at least reasonable and sane, they can tell the difference between the professional activist like Cliff Cawthorn, who is a former Kent City Council candidate, who lives in the city, no doubt, but they can tell the difference between someone like him and the actual people who do, in fact, represent the voice of the community. But he spoke yesterday at the council hearing.
I'm here because the city council should firmly reject a homeless camping ban. It's not compassionate, productive. And this is just about fear, putting what we don't like out of sight and out of mind. Do you want to live outside? Do you want to be forced to sleep in a room where you don't feel safe? Do you want to be forced to live in a certain way because just because you're poor? No.
It's a weird argument, but okay. No one's forcing them to do anything except abide by the law. We're saying you have the option. You can either go to our shelter or you can go somewhere else. That's an option. You're not being forced anywhere. This idea that you think that someone owns property that they're sleeping on is ludicrous. If you want to sleep outside, buy some land and pitch a tent. That's how you can go ahead and get away with that. But just simply taking over a sidewalk or a park or the entryway to a business, yeah, sorry, you don't get that right. You don't have that right. You can't just set up wherever it is you want to set up. Unless maybe Cliff is offering his front lawn or his backyard for this purpose. No one is sweeping them away. We are telling them we will put you into the system. Oh, but I don't feel safe in this. Okay, well, then too bad. We at some point, we're going to have to say, then that's your problem. Then that's a you problem. We're offering you safe shelter. You can pretend all you want that it's safer to live outside. You can pretend all you want that you are more comfortable outside. Okay, fine. Then you just can't live in the city of Kent. At some point, we got to step back and say, that's on you, dude.
If we want a solution to to the homelessness in Kent, then allow 24-hour shelter to exist in Kent. And then in the long term, pursue policies that allow for more affordable housing opportunities to be able to manifest here in Kent. Because shelter and housing is compassionate, necessary, and that's the solution to homelessness.
Shelter.
Not some kind of cruel, small-minded camping ban to make only, you know, a few, quite frankly, and make some people feel better while hurting others.
Okay, no one gets hurt unless they continue to stay outside. And kudos to the city of Kent for saying, yeah, we're done listening to the activist crowd. And by the way, I'm not upset with Cliff for feeling activated in his community and showing up. Kudos to him. Kudos to anyone who actually shows up to meetings and speaks. I may disagree with everything he said, but he's doing what a lot of folks on our side should be doing, which is show up. Meanwhile, City of Bellevue adopted an internationally recognized definition of anti-Semitism that has been pushed forward by the American Jewish Committee, the AJC. Now, I'm told that Bellevue is the first city in the Pacific Northwest that adopted this particular kind of proclamation, which does make sense to me because you're definitely not doing it in the city we don't talk about because you do have at least one anti-Semite on the actual city council. Shama Sawant! Here's the definition. I thought we would read it. Anti-Semitism is a certain perception of Jews which may be expressed as hatred towards Jews. Rhetorical and physical manifestations of anti-Semitism are directed toward Jewish and non-Jewish individuals and or their property, towards Jewish community institutions and religious facilities. So kind of that's it. Kind of direct and straightforward. Now, I suppose part of me says to the city of Bellevue, kudos, I guess. I don't know if anti-Semitism is a problem in the city of Bellevue. I certainly haven't seen many stories indicating that it was an issue. And just really in that general area, the last story I can think of anti-Semitism was one dude with a sign in Woodinville. So it wasn't even in Bellevue. But I'm not mad that they're taking a stand against anti-Semitism, which unfortunately, because of how many progressives live in this area, it is alive and well. at least from a political standpoint, the folks who don't think Israel has the right to exist. There was an anti-Semitic political rally that I was assaulted at not too long ago that we covered when it happened. That was in Seattle. I don't know if this is necessary. Again, I'm not angry. I'm assuming they didn't spend that much time on this particular issue, but I don't know why this is necessary. And I say that in part because I don't need any government, any group, to proactively tell me that they're against hate. My default is that you're against hate. I by default thought before this that Bellevue as an institution, the government, is against anti-Semitism, that they are against bigotry. I don't need them to adopt this resolution. I think it is a form of virtue signaling. And again, sometimes symbols and symbolism are incredibly important and do move the needle. I don't know if I needed that here. I'm assuming yet again that the city of Bellevue doesn't hate gay people or Muslims. I'm assuming they don't look down upon disabled people or bald people. I don't need you to come up with a resolution to say that. My assumption is you're there. Now, if there was an incident that is significant, that shows a level of hatred in a community, and you wanted to show your support, it's a little bit different, I suppose. I just, again, don't think that this is all that necessary. Finally, caller number 7 to 1-800-465-8770. We'll get a pair of tickets to the Freedom Series next Wednesday, a week from today, 7 p.m. in Renton, where you can come hang out with me, Brian Suits, and some very, very special guests. I'm told that the venue got a call asking if I was really going to be there. Yeah, what, you think I'm lying? Yes, I'm going to be there. So caller number 7 wins a pair of tickets. Please only call in if you actually can go and you have someone to bring. 1-800-465-8770. 1-800-465-8770. Be caller number 7 and you will win a pair of tickets to the Freedom Series. And we'll tell you who wins, by the way, when we come back. You're listening to The Jason Rant Show. 1-800-465-8770. Be caller number 7, and we're going to send you to the Freedom Series, where we'll come and hang out with me and take some photos. I can't wait. It's the Jason Rant Show. God, I love country music. That's the name of the song, I think. Kane Brown, right?
Just I thought this was the Applebee's one.
Oh, is this the Applebee's? Oh, yeah, now I want Applebee's. Ugh. Threw up a little bit in my mouth. Congratulations to Elizabeth and her 13-year-old son, Alex, from 360. They just won the Freedom Series contest. They will be heading to Renton next Wednesday to come hang out with me. We love it when we've got fans who are a little bit younger. You bring them in, you convert them to become a Republican early, and they will be set for life. And so many young kids, they go in through life just sort of meandering around as liberals, and then they realize the reason why I'm meandering and I'm so unsuccessful and miserable all the time is because I think like a liberal, and then they start to think like a conservative, and bam, their life is so much better. So Alex is already on the right track. He's already there. Unless he's coming to troll me. What if he's just some punk kid who, you know, is some hardcore lefty, and he's been just, he's playing the long game with mom. He's all like, no, I'm really a liberal. I'm making her think I'm on her side just so she can bring me to this event, and then I'm going to cause a scene.
I think that would be really funny.
Well, let me tell you this. I can't take on many people. I can take on a 13-year-old.
That's true.
I can take on, well, how tall is he?
I don't know. We'll have to find out.
Because now, you know, kids now, you look at a 13-year-old, you're like, I thought you were 24. You're 6'4", 230 pounds of lean muscle. What's going on there? What's happening? What are you eating? What are you feeding this kid?
I couldn't tell you. Well, hey, Elizabeth gave me a compliment on the phone.
What'd she lie to you about?
She thought I was you.
Okay, can we take the tickets back? You have a southern drawl.
I do not.
I do not. Yes, you do.
Okay.
You and I sound nothing alike. Elizabeth, just breaking my heart. I thought you were a fan. 1-800-465-8770 if you want to send me a text message. The Sumner City Councilman who sent that joke meme that we're supposed to pretend to be offended by, he was just kicked off of all the committees that he was serving on. So in other words, he keeps his job but doesn't have to do the same amount of work. His name is Patrick Reed. He told a colleague, because he works at the state level, he works for the, I believe it was the Secretary of State's office. He told a colleague via email that he didn't end up having to serve jury duty, and he was expecting to, and this was some good news for him. And so he sent this meme as a joke that said, the text was, if they're in court, they're guilty, especially if they're black or Mexican. Now, just a quick side note, because this story I saw from Cairo 7 TV, they corrected the spelling of black to have a capital B. I just thought was hysterical. They are word policing a meme.
That's all they have is word policing.
To make it more woke.
That's all they have.
It's just ridiculous. God bless them. Reed, for his part, said, it was a mistake. I meant to send another meme. I didn't pay attention. I didn't intend this to come off as racist as people are saying. To which I say, I don't believe you. I just think you thought this was funny, and I don't think you're racist. Because it is kind of funny. It's offensive funny. It's meant to make you laugh and then feel bad about yourself for laughing. And I would argue some of the best comedy, even if it's trollish like this, is meant to try to get you to laugh at things you should not laugh at. That's comedy.
It's a very lazy joke.
It is a lazy. I'm not saying it's a smart joke.
He didn't send it on accident.
I don't believe he sent it on accident. I think he knew exactly what it was. I think he thought it was funny because it plays against a stereotype. In the meme, in the text, it shows some white trash dude. He's making fun of the white trash dude. It's a funny, offensive joke. It's something that you would say to a close friend, but maybe not say it out loud for fear that the woke police will come out and get you. We have jokes that make fun of white people all the time. That one of the laziest jokes that I still think are used is about how white people can't dance and they all talk like this. They're real nerds. Like, it can be sometimes funny. It is okay to laugh at things. The intent matters. And I don't think there was anything here that showed his intent was to be racist. Sorry, maybe that's a politically incorrect thing to say. And again, I think he's a leftist too, so I'm kudos to me for reaching across the aisle and defending a racist. I'm kidding. Cairo 7 TV says, during a city council meeting on Monday, Reed's fellow council members voted to reprimand him for violating the council's rules and code of conduct. In a written statement presented during the meeting, it says, quote, "We are disappointed." Oh, shut up. You're disappointed. We are disappointed, and we disapprove of this council member's actions, whether intentional or accidental. Really? You disapprove of an accident? You that's not what you actually mean. You don't like the message that was accidentally sent out. You don't disapprove of the fact that he made an accident, just if we're being, a little bit more honest here. Instead of sweeping this under the rug, we want to speak out so everyone knows racist and discriminatory behavior, words, or attitudes are not acceptable and are not who we strive to be. I'm curious whether or not you're okay with sending out quote-unquote racist humor that is provided by a comedian who happens to be Latino or black or Asian, a comedian who sends out, who makes a statement that is homophobic when the comedian's gay. Or are you just saying this because he's white? Because I think you're only saying this because he's white. I don't think anyone saw the meme. I could probably just end there. I don't think anyone saw the meme. They made this into a story that's not really a story. But I don't think anyone who saw the meme, who's not in the crazy left-wing activist community, looked at this and said, oh, he's totally serious. He's thinking this about black people and Latinos. No one thinks that because we're smart enough to realize it's a joke. Now, if you want to point to behaviors that indicate maybe this wasn't a joke, okay, I think that's fair. I imagine that if someone's truly a racist, they probably also would have the audacity to send out racist memes. I believe that. But if your only evidence is this, I'm sorry, I'm not going to call this guy a racist. I just think that's wrong.
Couldn't somebody have just said, hey, man, maybe don't send this on your work account next time instead of
He didn't even send it as a council member. Didn't he send it?
It was a
work email. It was a Washington State account because he works for the state.
Still, just maybe on your personal email next time.
Oh, you know what? No, stop it. I'm not going to be the fun police here. Use your government-sponsored accounts to send all the memes you want. The more races, the better, because at some point I'll find it and I will make it into a story. And then I will forget I ever said that it's not really a story here.
All right, fair enough. We need the content.
Yeah, and make sure you send me the tips instead of Cairo 7 TV, because I could have done something a lot more fun with this one. Actually, I feel like I wouldn't have done this story if I got this tip. We talked yesterday about how people send me tips and they get mad if I don't immediately respond and write a big old story and then do it on the radio. I feel like if I got this tip, I wouldn't do this story. And I get tips all the time that sometimes I think they're interesting, but I won't do for a variety of reasons. This one, mildly interesting, maybe, I guess, kind of, sort of. Not really knowing much about Patrick, what's his name? Patrick Reed. Okay. But I don't find this to be a story or interesting, which is why I just spent 8 minutes talking about it. 1-800-465-8770 if you want to send me a text message or send me a tip on a story that I will find mildly interesting, but then pass on.